Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu. Michael Barr is off this week, and in a few moments, Damian Sassauer will be joining me. We've got an all-female show on deck for you today. We're going to check in with Kara Nortman. She is co-founder and managing partner of Monarch Collective. It's a $100 million fund pushing for equity in sports.
I meet with people who get it, who are reaching out to me, who are calling me up, some of the most extraordinary people in the world who I would have been dying to get meetings with 10 years ago, who are reading, you know, the why we're doing this post on the Monarch website, which comes from the heart and kind of makes the case from the head and the heart as to why now is the time for women's sports.
Kara is also co-founder of Angel City FC, one of the newest National Women's Soccer League teams.
Served up, header, it's in! Julie Ertz! Angel City leads!
That is on the way on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, but first, we talk with one of the winningest athletes of all time, U.S. alpine skier Michaela Schifrin.
There it is, the final gas pedal, and she gets it! Michaela Schifrin, victory number 83.
Since this moment, Michaela has piled up more wins and now holds the record for the most ski racing victories. Now, earlier in the year, we spoke with Ron Kruszewski, chairman and CEO of Stifel Financial, which has a big sponsorship deal with the U.S. alpine ski team that's led by Schifrin. And he knows full well that he and his firm lucked out in signing that deal just in time for Schifrin to go on a record-breaking run.
Talk about catching lightning in a bottle. We signed this deal last year. No one thought he'd have this kind of year. Maybe I did, but maybe that's about it.
That was Stifel Financial Chairman and CEO Ron Kruszewski on the Bloomberg Business of Sports talking about his firm's sponsorship deal with the U.S. Alpine Ski Team. Of course, his firm has been part of Schifrin's journey through a bunch of record-setting wins. She is a two-time Olympic champ and a seven-time world champion. Schifrin has 88 World Cup victories across six disciplines. The other thing, at just age 28, she is the winningest skier of all time, male or female.
The Queen of Killington, again, just a few gates to get by here, Michaela Schifrin.
So obviously, Damian and I were super excited to speak with her. Let's dive straight into our conversation with Michaela Schifrin, the skiing superstar. So I know that when it comes to skiing, awareness peaks every 4 years. During the Olympics, we all know about it. We all know the big names, starting with yours. And then it kind of wanes in the years in between. But you are working to create more awareness about the sport of alpine ski. And you've launched your own YouTube series this season called Moving Right Along. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came together and what you want to get out of it?
The whole idea started with basically, like you said, getting ski racing a little bit more out there. And of course, the biggest struggle we have with the sport is honestly basically rights to broadcasting. And it's not, it's just so much more complicated because there's so many entities involved. But I've been working with a small crew of like a couple people, one cameraman, one editor who's been helping to edit all the content back home and trying to put together a little bit more of a behind the scenes of my life, but also trying to get as much of other athletes and my teammates and the whole world, the whole circus and everything that's involved there, and show people what happens on a yearly basis, on a daily basis, and not just every 4 years like I think a majority of the people have felt so far or thought. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's a four-year cycle and people tune in for the games, but there's so much more that goes into the sport beyond that, and that's the story we're trying to tell.
Well, you know, Michaela, I mean, look, you know, your story goes, you know, knows no bounds, clearly 88 World Cup victories, but, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, you know, with Russia, where you, I think, won one of your first championships in Sochi, you know, back in the Olympics, back in, you know, the early aughts, and, you know, all the way forward to here with climate change and, you know, all the obstacles that are facing, you know, not just skiing, but winter sports in general, you know, what are your thoughts? You know, what are you hearing from, you know, boots on the ground from, you know, different investors and different, you know, and your audience, you know, like what is the passion? Is it still there? Is it increasing?
Yeah, I would say there's a ton of passion there. And the ski community or the maybe winter snow sports community, it's it's a tight-knit group. But the first, like, the first barrier we face when we're looking at bringing more people to that community is, honestly, it's accessibility. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not the most easily accessed sport. And a lot of that is really difficult to change because we're so dependent on weather, we're dependent on location. You have to be really creative if you want to find a way to get, you know, reach the masses in, for instance, in cities to be able to, you know, help them experience maybe a ski day or even a snowboard day for the first time and show them what that might feel like, because most people, you know, when they look at, say, taking a week vacation
right.
with their family, they're thinking about maybe going to a beach somewhere, not necessarily going to a ski vacation. And that's like, well, you might want to consider this because it actually might just be the greatest time of your life. It's a hard thing to imagine because it is not the first thing that comes to people's minds, but it is a world that it's a tight-knit community. It's a world that, like, we support each other. And as far as the snow sports industry goes, there's so much potential. It's probably not growing on the level that we're all, like, what we talk about every, at all the ski conventions and all the snow sports conferences. It's like, what's the best way to show people what this world is and why they need to be part of it?
Well, Mikhail, it sounds like you've been sitting around our kitchen table when we're talking about where to go on vacation, right? but you know, to that point, if I'm not mistaken, you are indeed recently married. And I believe your husband is another skier from Oslo, Norway. Hold on
now. He did his
homework. Hold on. So there's some rumors going about, Scarlett, that Michaela might be leaving the U.S. and taking up homage in Oslo.
Tell us what's happening.
Okay, that was an April Fool's joke and had nothing to do with me. I can't tell if you're joking because I can't see you in person.
We are joking with you. Oh, no, but goodness. That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, no, firmly Team USA. And my boyfriend, I would say he's firmly Team Norway as well, but we're having a great, he's here in New York City with me as well. So, we're having a great time and we train together as often as we can. We just finished up a ski camp in Norway mm-hmm. and got to train a bunch together on snow, which is one of the coolest things that I get to do because it's so cool to see him work and it's so amazing to work with him. And I feel like I improve so much when I'm around him. So yeah. It's a good situation.
So actually, that's interesting how you guys are working together. I'm curious what it looks like, the institutional support for skiing in a country like Norway versus here in the U.S., because Stifel Financial, for instance, signed a four-year sponsorship deal with the U.S. Alpine Ski Team, which you lead, of course. That happened recently. And of course, you are very involved in working with and attracting new sponsors. Compare and contrast the sponsorship situation for the U.S. team versus for, say, Norway's team?
What I would say is in the U.S., we are much more capable of working with new partners. And as athletes, we have quite a bit more ability to build more of an individual brand, which is hugely important as a professional athlete to be able to, you work from your organization and US Ski and Snowboard, we have quite a few sponsors. It's like a canopy over all the athletes, but then there's certain categories you can actually develop relationships on your own with different brands. And there's quite a lot more freedom for us than there is in Norway, which that's something that they tend to struggle with there because they have incredible sponsors for the federation, but they don't have nearly the access that we do to private funding, fundraisers, events like that. So overall, we have a bit more freedom in the United States. It's something I'm very grateful for, and I hope that we're able to continue down that path because it allows athletes to actually make a living in the sports that we do in winter sports, which, you know, they're not so mainstream. It's not football or baseball, and you don't have just an underlining, you know, a retainer deal with the organization because there's not that funding doesn't exist. So we're just looking for getting the resources from companies like Stifel. That has been an absolute game changer for us and for the whole organization this season. To work with Stifel and to have their support really as a front runner for our team and a huge, huge amount of resources for us to be able to train and compete. And it's like our sports are all massively expensive.
Yes.
And that's the first thing we have to look at. And it's a little bit more expensive for the U.S. because we're work, training, competing, and essentially living out of our suitcases in Europe for a majority of the year, the entire snow season, but the majority of the year as well. So it's, the expenses accumulate like crazy, and that's one of the reasons we need, like, organizations, for instance, US Ski and Snowboard, to find these supporters and create, like, a house for us to be able to do and access these sports and the training we need to do.
That was U.S. Alpine skiing phenom Michaela Shiffrin. We've got more of our conversation with the two-time Olympic champ coming up next.
There's a lot of discussion about what is the best way to target the snow sports season and make it accessible at the right time that works in an environmentally a far more friendly way.
On the Bloomberg Business of Sports, from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu. Damian Sassar will be joining me shortly. Michael Barr is off this week. So we have an all-female guest list today, because still to come is our conversation with Kara Nortman, co-founder of one of the newest National Women's Soccer League teams, Angel FC. She's also co-founder and managing partner of a $100 million fund that pushes for equity in sports.
That's what activated me. I wanted to get the women paid, and they were the best women in the world. And so I think that's a huge part of what led to Angel City and Monarch.
So you'll want to stick around for that. But first, let's get back to our conversation with a true goat. Skiing superstar Michaela Shiffrin.
Michaela, I want to go back to, you know, your new YouTube series, Moving Right Along, which is set to launch soon. And I want to just ask you what it was like. You know, I mean, look, you've been racing since you're 16. So, you know, you've been on the spotlight, you know, your whole life. But what's it like to be followed around by cameras and by staff and by, you know, makeup artists? I mean, what's that like? What's that been? What's that experience been like for you?
What I would say this season, when we started the vlog, I wasn't totally sure what to expect. The cameraman I work with, Mike Dawsey, he's someone I've worked with for a couple different projects with different sponsors. And right. Every single time I worked with him, I love the eye that he has for shooting video and photos. I like working with him. When he's fly on the wall, he's actually fly on the wall. I literally don't know he's there. So if it was pretty much anyone else, I probably wouldn't have taken the risk to say, like, yeah, most of the, basically every day in and day out for the whole season, follow me around and have point that camera at me. Because when I work with him, I don't notice it. And he still gets the greatest shots I've ever seen anyone take of me. So it helps to work with people who you know, you trust, you like the work that they do. You feel like it aligns with who you are as a person, your values. You just line up really well. Mm-hmm. That's really the only reason I was willing to start doing this. And I'm so overly excited, like, gone above and beyond my expectations. So I'm really looking forward to continuing with these projects. And
right.
It's opened a lot of doors as well for the work that I can do with partners and actually giving them a little bit more access on a daily basis, because Dawsey can do that work. Instead of looking at, you know, one sponsor production day or, you know, whatever it might be in my contract, we're able to get like blips and pieces throughout the entire season and actually get them more access and work harder on those partnerships as well without putting in a whole lot more effort from my side. So I can still focus. I mean, he's been at the start of almost every single race this season, getting content for the YouTube. And I don't even know he's there.
the trust factor is huge to increase that access. Damien mentioned earlier how global warming is changing winter sports overall, and certainly for skiing. I know that COVID made skiing more popular than ever, but global warming has made it difficult for ski resorts to operate, to really financially operate the way that they would like to, whether it's in the northeast of the U.S. or in Europe. From where you sit in the years that you've been skiing professionally, what's the biggest change you've seen when it comes to your ability to practice and to train and to compete around the world because of climate change?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest change, the most obvious change that I see is how different winter looks and how different snow looks than it used to. Even when I first came onto the World Cup scene about 12 years ago, the glaciers, they've really receded so much since then. And that's kind of the first thing that we talk about as a snow community is what we're kind of losing in terms of snow. Then you see more extreme weather patterns. You see excessive amounts of snow on the west coast of the United States this season, but in Europe, all across Europe, there was literally nothing. They were for ski races. They were helicoptering snow piles in from other areas to cover the race slope that we had to race on, and everything else is green. I mean, winter looks different, but it also comes at a different time. And I think we're at a crossroads with our whole world of trying to target winter when it seems to actually be happening, which might be a shorter period of time, mm-hmm. might be a little bit later. Normally ski areas open around, early November to mid-December, but we might be looking at different target dates for opening days, mm-hmm. and a different length of season and things that it's working in a more efficient way economically and environmentally. Not running all the operations at a time when people can't go and can't ski, but running operations at a time when people want to go and enjoy it. And there's a lot of discussion about what is the best way to target the snow sports season and make it accessible at the right time that works in an environmentally a far more friendly way. And then there's a lot, so much broader discussions about what we do in our community and how it does affect, like innately affect the environment, and how we can work harder to be part of a solution, at least be part of the conversations for the solution. Like countries and governments understand the systemic changes that may need to be made, and at least working towards finding solutions. And U.S. Ski and Snowboard partnered with POW this year to create our World Championships race suits. At the very least, there's a lot of discussions and there's a lot of innovation going on in the whole snow sports industry to take this crossroads and actually take the right path and allow us to experience snow sports for many years to come.
So Michaela, before we lose you, I have to embarrass you first. I just have to do it because here's my question. Look, you are the winningest slalom skier of all time. You have 41 World Cup slalom victories, okay? You've surpassed the Swedish legend Stenmark's previous record of 40. Back in 2019, you have 88 career World Cup wins and you're only 28 years old. Are you ready to retire? Are you just getting started here? I mean, what can we expect?
It is a really interesting question. I guess the best answer for that is after I won 87 this year, that was the record resetting victory. And the biggest question I got was, what are you going to do now? Are you still motivated or are you going to be done? And this whole time I've been thinking, like, I hope I don't just win 87 races and decide, okay, that's it. Like, that's all she wrote. That's all I want. And now I'm done. Because it would go so much against everything I've been saying the whole time, that I actually love doing the sport. And I'm motivated just like almost by improving itself, which is, it's maybe not what people want to hear. Sometimes it's a little bit more of a boring concept, or like, it's like people are like, yeah, right. But what do you actually really love? Like you want to break records, right? And that's a much more romantic way to think about the sport and just sports in general is breaking records and barriers and all this. But after I won 87, I think the most important race maybe of my career so far was getting the 88th victory, because when I was standing at the start for the second run that race, I had every right to basically not care at all and feel no pressure and not be nervous, because what is there left to accomplish? And I was still standing in the Stargate, like, I've got the butterflies. I want to do great. Well.
You are built to compete. That's what it comes down to. I mean, you're pursuing excellence. Yeah. That's what you've been training for your entire life. And it's not something anyone can turn off. Michaela, thank you so much for your time. You've been so generous with us.
Well, thank you guys so much.
That was Michaela Schifrin, the winningest skier of all time. By the way, if you missed any of that conversation, listen to it now on the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. On demand now at Bloomberg.com/podcast and, of course, on your favorite podcast platform. Now, still more to come. We go from one record-breaking woman in sports to someone who's pushing to help give more women the chance to follow in Michaela's footsteps. Kara Nortman, co-founder and CEO of Monarch Collective, will be with us next.
I feel like this in Back to the Future too sometimes, where I'm like holding the almanac and I can see the future. And I don't know why more people don't see it, but I think it has to do with focus and fun size.
That is straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Thank you for joining us on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu. Damian Sassar will be with us shortly. Michael Barr is off this week. Monarch Collective is a new investment fund with a pretty key mission, advocating for women in pro sports. The fund has already raised $100 million and is looking to put that money into teams, leagues, and more. Damian and I got a chance to talk about the fund with Kara Nortman, co-founder and managing partner of Monarch Collective. Kara is also co-founder of one of the newest National Women's Soccer League teams, Angel City FC. So let's dive straight into our conversation. Kara, it's so great to speak with you here on Bloomberg Business of Sports. Thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. So thrilled to be here with you guys.
So investing in sports is all the rage right now. Institutional investors have discovered it, or I shouldn't say discovered it, but have really started to appreciate how it's not correlated to the rest of the financial markets and that the growth trajectory is only up, up and up to the right. Can you talk a little bit about the pitch that you give, that you are expected to give, and that you do give each time you're talking about investing in women's sports right now? Why that moment is so opportune at this moment?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's important to put this all in context, right? 3 years ago, we were wondering if anyone would show up in a stadium again. Mm-hmm. And now it's all the talk. And I think, you know, men's sports and women's sports are at a very different point in their evolution. And so my pitch on women's sports is, you know, number one, it is all the things, you know. So in financial terms, inflation hedge, uncorrelated, retains value. On the women's side, you can see venture like multiples. So there's a real like risk, I would say risk kind of almost like arbitrage. I sometimes call it an arbitrage on sexism, where if you're getting into the right teams and leagues and right, the downside is quite limited, mm-hmm. but the upside, you could see multiples like what I saw in the early years of my venture career in the late 90s. It is a place where, kind of you can build these community, you can build, you know, kind of an investor base and a C-suite and a team that represents your community. So, you know, women, men, black, brown, white, all sexual preferences, all political preferences. And so we're starting at much lower enterprise values of these teams where you can build to the community and that actually drives revenue. And then it drives enterprise value and people pay attention. And then, I mean, some of the things are the same, right? These are essentially, kind of the most exciting IP platforms and entertainment experiences. And so if you build these sort of joyful movements in these stadiums that represent your city or your country, you can build these businesses that generate hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue and can grow and innovate in different ways with all kinds of different thinkers around the table.
Okay, you sold me.
Kara.
All right.
Kara, I so badly want to ask you about Julie Ertz. But before we do that, for our audience, you mentioned it, your venture career, your story is so fascinating. Can you just give our audience a little bit of a flavor of, you know, how you came up, your early start at MS, you know, how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, first of all, I think sometimes what we don't do is as important as what we do do. And coming out of college, I was deciding to go work in a consumer protection nonprofit or into the most quantitative, you know, kind of hardcore number crunching group at Morgan Stanley, or one of them, which was their merchant bank, essentially their captive private equity firm. And I got some advice where if I learned the quant side, I'd have a lot more time to do the nonprofit work. And so, I mean, my path was, I mean, I think a combination of what I did formally, private equity, and then I went into venture in 99. I think that was an important moment for me in the sense that people questioned that decision, right? I went to a firm called Battery Ventures, which, you know, was one of the firms that's gone on to, you know, generate very consistent returns and has been a high performer with incredibly wonderful, humble, high integrity, hardworking, studying the craft people. Candidly, some of my first LPs, which, you know, made me feel like, wow, maybe I have been doing
people do trust
well
me
for 20 years or 25 years. You don't really realize it until you go ask people for money and they give it to you. and then you think, oh my gosh, I really have to generate returns for these people. But I think what I talk about now is it wasn't obvious to go into venture back then. Now it is. But back then, it was a small pocket of the world. We had something to prove. It was a small part of the asset class. I took a pay cut. I turned down private equity jobs. But it was, you know, it was similar to the way I sort of feel sometimes like being an associate at Battery in 99 is very similar to how it feels to be in women's sports right now, where, you know, there's only been a few firms really focused on putting money into these high growth areas that most of the world was not yet paying attention to. And you could work hard, be a good person, you know, show up, price things in a reasonable way, exit at reasonable, you know, multiples, and reference well, so that, you know, people still want to work with the firms that were there then, Battery and Sequoia and Kleiner, and some of the firms know, but I think that is the opportunity is very similar. And so final thing I'll say is the analogy I make to venture back in 99 is it sort of today feels like, I feel like this in Back to the Future too sometimes, where I'm like holding the almanac and I can see the future. And I don't know why more people don't see it, but I think it has to do with focus and fund size. And the final thing is, I mean, I spent about 10 years operating. And so most of that time at IAC running the M&A group, and then in operating roles, running big business units, small ones. We were incubating things like Vimeo and Tinder to running big turnarounds. And so, you know, I think one of the things that's important for women's sports is you don't just come in and see everything like a financial structuring exercise that is similar each time. And you come in with creativity and you come in with an operational skill set that you're going to put behind that creative financial product. And you do work that will really reference well over decades.
Kara, you just mentioned something that was very, very interesting to me, because we've had John Patrikoff from Athletes Unlimited on, you know, and we've talked about investing in women's sports for quite some time here on the show. And you said and what makes it exciting for you, I guess, is that you're still out there selling people on that very concept. Is that right? I mean, what aren't people getting about women's sports?
Oh, it's such a fun time. I mean, it was a fun time when 100 people said no to us at Angel City too, because I believed in my soul they were wrong. And there weren't too many times in my life where I'd get 100 no's and believe it could still work. But it's more fun now because sometimes I get deep skeptics who are like, that's cute, you know, call me in 10 years, or, you know, just all the embedded biases we have as consumers kind of spill over into how we see the world. Or, hey, can I make billions of dollars off of this?
What's my ROI? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, but then I meet with people who get it, who are reaching out to me, who are calling me up, some of the most extraordinary people in the world who I would have been dying to get meetings with 10 years ago, who are reading, you know, the Why We're Doing This post on the Monarch website, which comes from the heart and kind of makes the case from the head and the heart as to why now is the time for women's sports. But, you know, I would say that now we have data. We have data like stadiums being packed for Angel City and the San Diego Wave and the fourth division Newcastle women's team you know, for their second, you know, their second game ever hosted at, I think, the men's stadium, and they're packing it too. And so, you know, I think the data helps more people pay attention, but then people are curious around, you know, how do you actually do that? And it isn't just going up with a financial instrument and hoping the you'll see 20 investments, hope they'll fall on their lap. I really think you have to be very intentional about where you're spending time, what your value proposition is, how you're building a coalition, you know, how you're structuring things, the talent you're bringing to the table. So, yeah, I've gotten pretty philosophical on this stuff and was reading a little, I mean, truly was reading a little Machiavelli, my brother sent me this weekend. And, you know, there was one quote I found in the print that I don't think I've found since I was like a political theory major in college or a political major in college. But it's, we don't really believe in new things until we have a long experience of them. And we still only have a very short experience of extraordinary data. But some many more people are paying attention to that data. And so you're seeing people show up with interest, both due to joy and greed. Mm-hmm. And so it's an interesting moment in time because there's a lot more carrot than stick.
I love that. Both due to joy and greed. That was Kara Nortman, co-founder and managing partner of Monarch Collective. We've got more of that conversation coming up next on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show from Bloomberg Radio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Scarlett Fu. Damian Sassauer will be with us shortly. Michael Barr is off. Now, Kara Nortman is co-founder and managing partner of Monarch Collective. It's a $100 million fund that aims to elevate women in pro sports. Damian and I had the pleasure of talking with her about the fund, as well as her other work in sports, including with Angel City FC. Let's return to that conversation. Let's talk a little bit about Angel City FC. What is the backstory here? What was the first phone call that led to your being a key member in founding this club? Who brought it up first? How did it come about?
You know, it actually came up for me. Kind of the first thing that happened was I went to the 2015 World Cup game. And so it was kind of, you know, 7 or 8 years in the making. I went to the game. I was completely activated by, I felt like I was 12 again. I couldn't buy a jersey. I couldn't find content. And I started this journey of what was then sort of accidental market research and then turned into very intentional market research. Mm-hmm. And so the road for me went through, I truly was like, you know, told that I was the only person who couldn't find, like wanted to buy jerseys and watch content, but Instagram existed. And so there were a couple of things that kept happening. I ended up meeting a bunch of the players and helping, you know, just as a friend with their business, the head of the U.S. national team, who pulled me into the pay equity fight and asked me to be an advisor. And I didn't even know what that meant. I was a capitalist being asked to help socialists. but I was very, that's what activated me. I wanted to get the women paid and they were the best women in the world. And so I think that's a huge part of what led to Angel City and Monarch is sort of the full view of all stakeholders. And if you kind of bring everything together, and you think about how to lift up all stakeholders and it's not perfect that you can build something. So anyway, that's the backstory. Mm-hmm. I basically ended up pulling Natalie Portman into the pay equity fight. We'd met through some of our gender equity work and started throwing events together. And candidly, one day she said, why don't we start a team? And I said, are you nuts? Like, I have a full-time job, 3 kids, you know, and she said, well, don't you know how to do this? I said, yeah. I mean, she's like, don't, you know, like I can do this, but usually I don't need a stadium and an exclusive license to bring something to market. You can just start building a dating app and maybe it turns into Tinder. Maybe it doesn't. And you know, that's okay. But honestly, I say now, you know, the queen of Star Wars, the first female Thor says,
don't you know how to do this? Let's start a soccer team. And
that's a challenge you can't back down from.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, growth mindset, let's go. Or as the women's national team would say, LFG. so that was really, we have a text exchange. It's actually on Twitter somewhere. And I think it is in our HBO documentary. You'll see it in the trailer for it. But I started doing research and I realized it was feasible. I started talking to the men's team, stadiums, different people in U.S. soccer, et cetera. And then I realized that we needed somebody to operate it day to day. And I started looking for a president, and I recruited in Julie Ehrman, who became our third co-founder. We played basketball against each other in high school. So I'd known her, you know, for 25, 35 years. She was much better than me, for the record. And I now only play against her because she's so competitive. I don't want to lose for her in a pickup game. But yeah, that's what started it. And then, you know, like to say, we got 100 no's. We raised our first $1 million before COVID. And, you know, we're now doing many tens of millions of dollars in revenue, $1 million in contracted sponsorships, selling out stadiums. But most importantly, it's the first majority female, you know, owned, female backed mm-hmm. professional sports team in the country. And we've done it where we make decisions based on mission and finances sometimes come second to mission, which I think will help us drive finances over many generations and not just over 2 or 3 years.
Kara, it is such a special story. I mean, when I think of the new Angel City docuseries, Scarlett, I think of The Captain, I think of Last Dance, Winning Time. I mean, my question, Kara, is, you know, you mentioned Natalie Portman. Are you prepared to become a TV star? What are you going to say when you accept that Emmy after this thing goes viral? I mean, it's such a great story.
Yeah, well, let's just say that I'm totally comfortable with the fact that people are more interested in seeing somebody like Natalie on a screen or Julie's day-to-day. A lot of what I do is in the boardroom and behind the scenes. So I'm definitely in the story. I think, I mean, it is special and getting the outreach from just people seeing the trailer and seeing our text exchange and stuff like that. It just doesn't feel real to me. I guess I pinched myself, and they played it in the stadium, the sold out crowd, and we played the wave. And they played it a few times, and I just sort of, the first time I stopped and just watched it in mm-hmm. this packed stadium. And I don't know how to explain it. I think last year I didn't really stop and allow myself to feel just present and proud. I think I was nervous. This is too good to be true. I feel very proud of what we've done, and I know things will go right and wrong. I sort of joke around that, you know, in my 80s, if something isn't going right, I'd be back in there, you know, kind of, you know, like rolling up my sleeves with not my black turtleneck, but, you know, whatever it is.
It's funny, Scarlett, she's so cute. She's nervous now, but like give her a few years and she's going to be like, that Julie Ertz, like, why isn't she running down the field?
Well, fortunately, I stay exclusively on the business side. So if you want to talk about the holding mid and you know, what one needs to do in that six slot, we can do it. But I truly, I think my role in sports is the building the cap table. It's building the revenue streams. It's all that sexy stuff. But then I think it is bringing people over from tech and media and men's sports and giving them someone they want to walk with and would enjoy talking to every day. I can definitely tell you how amazing Julie Ertz is, because she is
she's
a human being in every way. Like her,
what an acquisition.
Fierceness on the field, amazing. But I also had nothing to do with it. So give all the credit to Angela, who runs Sporting, and Freya, our coach, and Julie Ehrman on that.
But what you drove, of course, is the formation of this team and bringing in investors. And there, as you mentioned, so many prominent investors. I imagine that at some point you were kind of good. You're like, okay, we have enough of what we need. What does the success of Angel City mean when it comes to new franchises? Because there are reports of teams starting in Boston or the Bay Area. I mean, are some of the people who might have been interested in investing in Angel City FC now looking to a team in Boston, a team in San Francisco or Oakland?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite quote from high school is, if I'm seeing something like, if I can see further than others, it is only because I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. And I sort of, that's the way I look at women's sports, women's soccer, women's basketball, women's cricket, rugby, racing. You know, you have the 99ers, who inspired three leagues, and then finally the NWSL, which is the league, right, mm-hmm. led by Jeff Berman. And then you had the Portland Thorns, and they, you know, the Portland Thorns are the ones who kind of rolled out the red carpet for us, showed us what a packed stadium looks like, how to build a supporters group. We went and then studied everyone, the Sounders, Barcelona, everyone.
And so when we were coming in, we had one team to look at. Now you have multiple teams to look at. You have dozens and dozens of bids. We were a single bid. Kansas City came in for a bunch of reasons, but I got a phone call the day we announced from my college friend, Angie Long. You know, that I always say it's the first time the old girls network worked for me. And she called me up and used my sports nickname and said, "Hey, Nordy, how do you do this? And how do I do this?" And I said, "Well, let me do for you what Portland did for us." And we gave her our model and I introduced her to people. I got on the phone with her. I put her in touch with Julie. And then they were ready for when Salt Lake was selling their franchise and they bought it for twice the price of ours and thought it was a crazy price. Well, we're now at 10x that price. You know, and it is why I sort of call it my Jerry Maguire moment where I realized I needed to leave, you know, Tech Venture and dedicate my life to kind of repeating Angel City models, and investing in women's sports teams and leagues and rights, around the world, because I think the NWSL and leagues around the world will be strong when every team is packing stadiums and anything I can do to capitalize that. And there's capital available now, right? There's a lot more people interested, but how do you build that syndicate to get the talent in and pack the stadiums and figure out all the multifaceted components that get people to want to show up and keep showing up and then innovate around the models? Like, that's what we're doing with Monarch in a very hands-on, concentrated way, so we can show Angel City type things can be replicated multiple times. And my partner did it at the Niners in almost every operational role when they were moving from Candlestick to Levi's. And so we look at men's sports too, you know, and so I think it's just the beginning for women's sports. And there's a lot of purposeful work to do probably for the rest of our lives and then some.
Kara, so much fun having you. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Bloomberg Business of Sports.
Thank you, guys. Such a pleasure to be here. I love your work. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us. Tune in again next week for the latest on the stories moving big money in sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor Data Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.